This is a special episode of the Midlife Mixtape Podcast taped live in San Francisco at the Beta Brand Podcast Theater on Thursday, May 30th. Welcome to Midlife Mixtape, the podcast. I'm Nancy Davis Coe, and we're here to talk about the years between being hip and breaking one.
Where do I belong? Tell me why I'm here and what's taking this long. When can I move on?
This week's episode is sponsored by FindTheRightCollege.com, an online membership service that gives families everything they need to start their students' college search, understand options, and make a great college choice. My youngest daughter just graduated from high school, so I know how stressful and scary it can be to watch your teen apply to college. There are so many moving parts and different things to think about, and that's even if you, like me, decide to forego photoshopping your kid's face onto a pole vaulter's body to impress the admissions office. But when it comes to figuring out the right college path for your kid, you do need all the help you can get, like FindTheRightCollege.com. FindTheRightCollege.com is a comprehensive online resource developed by former admissions officers that helps families find and afford the best college options. My daughter used it as part of her own college search process, and we found it complete and easy to use. For more information, go to FindTheRightCollege.com and learn about their flexible and affordable membership plans. And right now, FindTheRightCollege.com is offering a free essential college search timeline. This timeline will help make sure you don't miss any critical steps, which is what half your stress is going to come from anyway, believe me. You just are always wondering, what are you supposed to be doing when? So head over to FindTheRightCollege.com. That's FindTheRightCollege.com and look for the college search timeline. This episode is also brought to you by the San Mateo County Fair. The San Mateo County Fair runs June 8th through 16th, and it has so much going on, from barn animals raised by 4-H clubs to an Aussie Kingdom exhibit with animals from down under, and a really packed concert schedule, too. In fact, I'm going to be giving away 2 Gold Circle tickets to the Better Than Ezra show for June 13th. So those are the tickets that include fair admission plus reserved prime seating right near the stage. So the contest is going to be over on the Midlife Mixtape Facebook page this week, so make sure to like that page and watch for your chance to enter, and find more information, the full concert schedule, and everything else you need to know at SanMateoCountyFair.com. That's SanMateoCountyFair.com. Okay, guys, today's show is coming at you live and uncut. Stay tuned all the way to the end because Beta Brand is giving Midlife Mixtape listeners a special treat. Here we go.
Here's Nancy in Midlife Mixtape. Welcome.
Hey, everybody. I'm Nancy Davis Coe, and we're here to talk about the years between being hip and breaking one. So thank you so much for coming. I want to start by thanking you guys for coming out on a night that my Warriors are playing the Raptors, and I'm directing this mostly at my husband. I am recording it, so it's cool. We're going to be fine. But thank you, honestly. I know you guys all have a lot of things to do, a lot of demands on your time, and it means a lot for you to come out and support local creatives and local businesses, so I'm really appreciative for you guys all being here tonight. I also wanted to give out a shout-out to 2 special members in the audience tonight. Ann and Jim are celebrating their 21st anniversary with us this evening. I noticed they're not sitting in the same row. So when you have a marriage that's old enough to drink, 21 years tonight, you know, I think this is part of what makes it work. You don't always sit together. The other reason I'm going to mention Anne is because with my tagline, the years between being hip and breaking one, Anne broke her hip last year. She had a skiing accident, and one of the first texts I got from her was, "Is it okay if I still listen to the podcast?" So I want to make it very clear that if you suddenly break a hip or become hip, you are still very welcome, very, very welcome to be here with us tonight. So thank you so much, everyone, for coming out. I also want to thank Beta Brand. I have been a fan of these clothes well before they started the podcast theater. They have the most amazing pants. I know somebody else in the audience is wearing a pair tonight because we were comparing. But I feel like Sally O'Malley when I wear their clothes. I don't know if you remember this Saturday Night Live skit. I can kick. I can stretch. It's very comfortable. I'm wearing the sassiest pants tonight, and I feel like they embody everything that was good about the 80s, like what we remember of the 80s. We've let all the bad stuff go. So thank you, Beta Brand, so much for making a space for local creatives to do their stuff.
This happens every Thursday night. You probably saw other posters outside. I know my friend Wonder Dave is doing his Nerd Rage podcast here in a couple of weeks, so come out again on a Thursday night. This will be open. This will be happening. I was going to say this is my favorite Beta Brand item of clothing, but only until I get the one that is supposed to be delivered in June. It is a leopard print blouse, but when you look up close, the leopard print is Ruth Bader Ginsburg's face. And I know. So I believe they still have a scarf available in that print, so I'm just saying, betabrand.com, check it out, vote for what you like. It's a great clothing line, and thank you again, Beta Brand, for having us here. I promised you guys when you registered for your ticket that we would have some fun and games with the audience, some prizes and giveaways. So we're going to start the first one right now. It turns out I have a book coming out in December. It's called The Thank You Project, Cultivating Happiness, One Letter of Gratitude at a Time. And it's coming out from Running Press on December 3rd. And it is about a year that I decided that I would write 50 thank you letters to various people who had influenced me and helped me and shaped me over the years leading up to that point. So it's available for pre-order now, but it's not coming out till December. But I do have a early reader copy, and I'm going to give this away by the end of the night tonight. I will warn you, this is not even an advanced reader copy. I was able to hit this with an editing stick one more time before it went to my publisher. So there's a section in here where I talk about a Bruce Springsteen concert. If you win this tonight, just don't read that part. I don't know if I was drunk when I wrote it or what. It doesn't make any sense. It's gone now. But if you are interested in taking this early reader copy home with you, here's what you need to do. Go on Instagram, share a picture from tonight. So take a picture at some point during the next hour. Tag Beta Brand and their betabrand_HQ. It'll pop right up. Tag me, Midlife Mixtape, and if you could hashtag it, Midlife Mixtape Live. So share a picture on Instagram. I have my social media department, which is my friend Wendy in Austin, Texas, surely behind a large glass of Chardonnay, monitoring Instagram. So she's going to pick somebody at random and text me a name at 7:55 because I said I can't do that and everything else. So that'll be the last thing we do. I'll announce who's going to take home a copy of the book. So I hope you'll stick around. And yeah, the Thank You Project, it's coming out in December. So when I started my podcast, the very first thing I did was I said, I've got to have great music for my podcast because I am really, really into music. I love it. I think about it a lot. And I thought right away of this wonderful singer-songwriter who's been standing here next to me the whole time, Kyle Tarisi, who's here with me now. He has originally performed as the Plastic Arts, which is when I heard him the first time, but he's been recording as M the Heir Apparent since 2016, and he's going to play the theme song to the Midlife Mixtape podcast, which is a song called Be Free, and it's from his EP of the same name. So Kyle, take it away.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Woo! For many of you, this will be the first time you hear the song all the way through. So.
I belong. Tell me why I'm here and what's taking this long. When can I move on? I'm ready for confirmation to come. It's the first thought I compete with every morning. Before I'm even on my feet, I pray and I repeat. Don't wanna be this, don't wanna be. Don't wanna give up, I wanna give back. I wanna be free by whatever means. Whatever you want from me, I wanna be. Where did I go wrong? Give me back the years that are wasted and gone. Say you won't be long. I've been waiting here for salvation to come. The first thought I compete with every morning. Before I'm even on my feet, I pray and I repeat. Don't wanna be this, don't wanna be that. Don't wanna give up, I wanna give back. I wanna be free by whatever means. Whatever you want from me, I wanna be. Don't wanna be this, don't wanna be that. Don't wanna give up.
riding right here, getting this act together. Whatever you wish, top of my list, I'll make you this pack forever. I wanna be set free by whatever is holding me back. Show the way, show the way, show the way. Yeah. I don't wanna be this, don't wanna be that, don't wanna give up, I wanna give back. I wanna be free by whatever means, whatever you want from me. I wanna be, don't wanna be this, don't wanna be that, don't wanna give up, I wanna give back. I wanna be free by whatever means, whatever you want from me. I wanna be, I wanna be. I want to be free by whatever means.
Thank you.
All right, slide into the interview chair, Kyle. Thank you so much. God, I love hearing that song in full. What a treat.
Thank you. I like playing it in full.
Yeah. So the first question I always ask on the podcast is, what was your first concert and what were the circumstances? So Kyle, lay it on us.
My first concert, I was 15, and I saw a band called the Deftones when I was living in Tucson, Arizona. It was the first time I smelled pot, and it was also the first time I got hit in the face, because I was like, I'm going to get in the mosh pit. And I had this brand new Deftones t-shirt that I had on, and I had blood all over it by the time my mom picked me up. And,
she must have been happy.
Yeah, she was proud.
The first time I saw you in concert, I don't know if you remember this, it was a house concert in San Francisco, and you were opening for Peter Case of the Plimsolls.
Right, I remember that, yeah.
So do you guys ever go to house concerts? It's such a fun way to see local music and in a mellow setting. And what I really remember about that concert, besides being so impressed by you that I walked out and bought two of your CDs, was that there were chickens. Do you remember there were chickens in the backyard?
There were chickens, and I also remember one man was so intoxicated that he fell over.
Yes, I remember him too. I didn't want to bring it up because it was disrespectful.
I'd forgotten about it until you said that, and I said, oh, I remember that.
Yeah. So that was the first concert where I saw you, Backyard Chickens. The last tour you did was slightly different than that. Do you want to tell everybody where your latest?
Yeah, I got back from doing a West Coast tour with Matt Nathanson. He lives here in San Francisco, and he and I did 8 shows on the West Coast. He did a national tour for 2 months, and so I was able to join him in Seattle and spend some time with him. So
that's awesome. So, you know, you go out and hear local music, and you never know where people are going to end up, like doing a national tour with headliners like that. That's pretty awesome.
Well, and doing cool podcasts. So.
Yeah, well, yes. And when you get on one of those, do call and let me know. So you and I were just talking about the audiences in L.A. and San Francisco and the fact that they chat all the way through the show.
They're a bunch of chatty Cathys in San Francisco.
Why are you going to go to a concert if you're just going to talk the whole time? Why?
Well, look, also, it was a great show, but, you know, when people ask me, like, you know, how were all the shows? And I said, yeah, L.A. and San Francisco were definitely the loudest audiences.
It makes me crazy. I mean, you can go to a coffee house and talk, although not near me, because I don't want you near my table if you're talking there either. But you had a great tour. So one of the things that I've noticed about your music as I followed it over the years is you're kind of exemplifying the new economics of the music industry. Mm. So you don't necessarily put out albums so much as you're on Spotify, you're streaming on Spotify, you've got a Patreon account. Mm-hmm. So tell us, how, as a working musician, do you make the economics of it work? What are the different components, and how can people support you?
Well, I mean, you got to be fluid. I think, I used to definitely put out, you know, records like most of my peers, which is, you know, every 3 years or so, you'd go in the studio and make a record. That just wasn't enough for me. And I think about 3 years ago when I started this new project, I just decided to release music constantly. My previous experience had shown me you can't really control what's going to do well. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're only taking a shot at a target once every 3 years, you know, you might be disappointed. But if you're shooting all the time, you know, the more shots you take, the more you make. And so you don't have a lot of control over it. But a couple years ago, I got really lucky and got placed on some curated Spotify playlists. And so ever since that took off, I'm sort of all in on streaming right now, which is rare. I mean, you know, it's not something you have a lot of control over. And, you know, it's pretty hard to replicate as well. But for right now, that seems to be the thing that's working the most for me. For a lot of artists who are having trouble getting ears on streaming, that's actually probably the biggest audience that I have is on Spotify.
So if you're Spotify clients and you want to hear more of this kind of music, make sure you're checking out M, the Heir Apparent, and streaming it, because it makes a difference. I think as somebody who used to really love the act of going to a record store and flipping through vinyl and bringing home the, you know, reading the liner notes, you think it doesn't make a difference, but it can. I mean, that is a valid revenue stream, right?
Mm-hmm. I like it. I mean, I think it's definitely here to stay, and I certainly understand being critical of it, but I use Spotify myself. I think it's a great service. And, you know, I think music is like any other industry. If you want to do it, then you have to do it in the marketplace as it exists. And if you don't want to, that's perfectly fine. But, you know, I've been lucky and, you know, I'm going to continue doing it. So,
And the other great way to support local musicians, of course, is coming out to see them play. So you can get onto Kyle's mailing list and find out when he's going to be opening mm-hmm. for Matt Nathanson or other performances. Do you have anything on the calendar right now?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing another West Coast tour in July from Seattle, Portland. And I will be in San Francisco, right at the street, actually, at a place called The Lost Church on nice. July 20th. I'm having my friend Abe Becker, who's a poet, spoken word artist. He's going to open up for me. And the Lost Church is a really cool space, not much bigger than this, actually. So it'll be intimate. And yeah, I hope to see some of you there.
So check out his website. Check out the Lost Church event. If you go, you better not talk. That's I'm going to just put it out there because I'll be around bashing heads. So. Okay, so those of you who had registered for the event already last week may have gotten an email from me where I asked you that question about what was your first concert and what were the circumstances. And I have an array of mugs for those of you who answered. So Kyle and I are going to read some of the answers. We have quite a wide variety of first concerts here in the group. If we read your concert, then you can get a mug at the end of the evening from my lovely assistant. Rise up, lovely. No, stand up. This is my daughter, Maddie.
Hi, Maddie.
She is not even free labor. I had to pay her, but it's okay. So at the end of the night, make sure that you check out Maddie, and she will give you one of the mugs. So, okay, first concert, Kyle.
Okay, so this one is from Carolyn Kandek. She here?
Yes, she is. I'm looking at her. Raise your hand, Carolyn.
So Carolyn's first concert was the Commodores in the Superdome on a first date in the ninth grade with a guy named, wow, we're going full first and last name? Eric Ettinger.
Oh, Eric.
Pretty good for a first date, huh? We had row 8 tickets, and the show opened with a fire explosion, and then Lionel Richie and gang magically appeared on the stage. It was so hot that my eyelashes and bangs totally got singed. I guess that's a hot date.
All right, Carolyn. All right.
That's strong.
Commodores.
Coming out strong.
Commodores in the Superdome. All right, the next one is from Carrie Motometti. It was August 1983. I was 12. My aunt and uncle took me to Pine Knob to see Men at Work and an unknown opening act at the time called INXS. That's right, INXS was opening for Men at Work. So, 80s, you so crazy. It was my first concert, and I really remember being struck by the T-shirt stands that you had to go to, that you had to go by before getting in, and how there was a mob to get them. Having no idea that the concert tee collectible phenomena was a thing, I didn't get a shirt, and later, after seeing the kids always wore their concert shirts to school the next day as a badge of honor, I wished I had. I did get one when I went back to Pine Knob a few years later without my parents. When my parents forced me to go see Tina Turner, and I only agreed because who was the opener? Men Without Hats. What is it with the men and the but yeah, thank you, Matthew. Matthew's doing the dance and the, thank you, safety dance in row 2. I clearly have a track record for interesting openers. Now, you can tell Carrie works in marketing because she included some fun facts about Pine Knob in a bulleted form. It was the concert venue in the Detroit area built in the 70s. If you've been to Pine Knob, shout out. Make a noise. Just Carrie.
Trendsetter.
It became known as DTE Energy Music in 2002. That's a ridiculous name. It ranks among the top-selling outdoor concert venues in the world. David Cassidy was the opening performance in 1972. Oh, I just got sweaty. And Eddie Money always opened the season in May. Oh, that's right, because he's from Detroit, right? Diana Ross made it her hometown stop during summer schedules. So it's I actually did a podcast episode where I invited listeners to call in with their concert stories. And whenever I do a listener episode like that, I have to kind of group them somehow. And there was a whole Pine Knob section of the podcast because so many people saw their first show at Pine Knob. So that's how I know it. Thank you, Carrie. Men without hats or work, whichever. At least you got to see in excess. All right, so you get a mug.
I read ahead on this one. This is good. So Evan Weissman?
Evan's
okay,
here.
Hey, Evan. It was 1978. I was 12 years old, and my dad decided it would be a nice father-son thing to go see the Grateful Dead. He smoked weed and knew a bit about the Dead, but I don't think he or I was prepared for the full Deadhead experience that we stepped into. But it was awesome. We had a great time and even saw the Dead again a few years later. That's a good one.
Awesome. What a great dad. The father, the father-son weed outing, Grateful Dead weed outing. All right, so what about Laura Wilkinson? Are you here? There she is. She was 13 when she went to her first concert. It was Blink 182, and no doubt, so she's younger than us. She might actually still be hip, but it's okay. I'm glad you're here. It was back, she said, I remember in the middle of all the small things, Tom DeLonge changed the lyrics from surprises let me know she cares to blowjobs let me know she cares. I could see that. And to this day, I refuse to sing the song any other way. And as I said to Laura, now me too. That's going to be the only way it goes down. All right, and we have one more.
All right, one more. Sarah Clough. Sarah. Sarah with an H. Wow, this is strong. My first concert was the Eagles, Heart, and Little River Band in 1980 in Connecticut. I was 13 in eighth grade, and my friend invited me. We drove and parked the night before the concert in her older sister's boyfriend's van. My friend and I pretended to sleep on the floor while separated from us by a curtain and about 3 feet. The boyfriend tried to convince the older sister in whispers. the boyfriend tried to convince the older sister in whispers that it was okay to have sex. We were asleep. She was doubtful. They had sex, and we heard everything. It was a great concert. Heart played Barracuda.
All right, audience concerts. Thank you so much, you guys. Come see Vanna White after the show and get your mug. So Kyle is going to play us one more song before he goes. What song is it?
This is a song called Never Known.
And this is something we could stream on Spotify afterward,
indeed.
I bet. Indeed we could.
Are there any single folk here? No? We got one? Everyone's coupled up? Okay, we got a few.
Just a couple.
This is a song about being single in San Francisco.
It's only got me wishing that I never know. Oh. You could be unknown to me if you like. You could be another stranger beside. But if you're feeling at all like I'm feeling, why leave if you don't have to? It's so terrible with treating me right. You know you don't need my permission to go. Won't beg you to plead your position. You can stay if you're not ashamed to go. go. If I see where it's gone, it's only got me wishing that I never know. It's only got me wishing that I never know. It's only got me wishing that I never know. Baby, if I don't forget, you remind me. Baby, if I don't forget, you remind me. Baby, if I don't forget, you remind me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you.
What a treat. Thank you so much, Kyle. So check him out. He's going to be here afterward, too, so you can talk to him for a minute. My next guest is Joe Garofoli. Joe is the... let's give it up for Joe. You don't even know what he's done yet. Wait till you hear that. Welcome.
Hey, how
wait,
you doing?
Swing this over to you. There you go.
All right.
That's good. All right. Is that good?
Are we good here? Okay.
Yeah, I think we're fine. So Joe is the San Francisco Chronicle's senior political writer covering national and state politics, and he's worked at the Cron since 2000 and in Bay Area journalism since 1992 when he left the Milwaukee Journal. He is the host of It's All Political, the Chronicle's political podcast. Joe has won numerous awards and covered everything from fashion to the Jeffrey Dahmer serial killings to two Olympic Games to his own vasectomy, which he discussed on NPR's Talk of the Nation after being told he couldn't say the word balls on the air. Look at Buddy, you can say balls on
my
podcast.
I'm going to say balls right now, just to get it out of the way.
Just to get it done. He regularly appears on Bay Area radio and TV talking politics and is available to entertain at bar mitzvahs and first communions. And Joe is here on the eve of the California State Democratic Convention, which kicks off tomorrow with 14 Democratic POTUS candidates. But yes, he made time to be here.
Yes. So 15. Marianne Williamson will now be here.
Good God. Okay.
For those who care.
All right. So I think you know the first question I'm going to ask you.
I do.
All right.
I do. It's probably a memory that a lot of people here share. My first concert was Molly Hatchet. It was the Beatin' the Odds tour right after their Flirtin' with Disaster. Flirtin' with Disaster, anybody?
Sure.
This is sort of a next generation Leonard Skinner. I grew up in Pittsburgh. It was Devil's Night, 1980. Devil's Night's the night before Halloween when people do a lot of pranks and tricks. So as we took the streetcar in, people were, you know, lined the trolley tracks and were just whip eggs at the trolley car as we're going to the city. And then, of course, early high schoolers, ninth graders, we had our bottle of Southern Comfort that we were sharing.
Sure.
And
because you're making good choices when you're a ninth grader going to
Molly. Choices,
I mean,
a lot
obviously.
Of good choices. The trolley driver threatened to kick us off the train. We go there. Our pregame meal was at this hot new restaurant in Pittsburgh called Wendy's. one member of the party vomited on his orange tray. We left it there, and we moved on to the concert. But I don't, you know, I was thinking about this when I knew that was going to be the first question. And so it was a fine show. It was a fine show. But 2 years later there, I saw the greatest concert of my lifetime and for what became my favorite band of all time.
If you're listening to this on tape delay, he is literally undressing.
I'm unbuttoning my shirt right now,
buddy.
One at a time. And for the self-proclaimed only band that matters, The Clash.
The Clash.
Yeah. I figured that'd be more in your wheelhouse.
This interview just went up to an 11. This is now operating at an 11.
I checked, you know, there's that website, FM Setlist.
Yes, I'm on that too.
That's the greatest website. You can look up the set list for any concert you've ever seen. And I went back and looked at that set list. I go, what a...
Can we swear? Go ahead.
Like, what a fucking great show that was.
And balls, so was what a fucking great
balls.
Show.
Balls. You just got your label.
I started at an E. Okay, I knew it was going to go all that way. You know, the reason I always laugh about Molly Hatchet is when we were, so my brother was a fan, and in the 70s, they had this song called Dreams You'll Never See. And if we asked my parents, like, hey, can we go to Florida? I grew up in upstate New York. They'd be like, that's a Molly Hatchet tune. And that's what they meant, Dream You'll Never See. That was like
wow.
A standard.
Your parents dropping Molly Hatchet references.
Standard snapback on
very
us.
Cool.
That's a Dream You'll Never See. today, kid. So, yeah, 70s were different. Now, you told me you have an interesting mixtape story you wanted to share.
I do have an interesting mixtape story. It's a kind of a very sweet one, and it's a contemporary one. We all remember the mixtape, you know, when we were back in the day. It was like, you know, it was something that you gave to your loved one. There's someone who you wanted to be your loved one, or perhaps a new loved one. And so a good friend of mine, her husband passed several years ago, cancer, and she hasn't really dated that much. And she's our age. So she just randomly was on Facebook, and she connected with someone who was the husband of a friend of hers from college. His wife, that woman, had died of cancer a couple years ago. They started talking and blah, blah, blah. And it's one of those whirlwind things, you know, when you're middle age, the timeline speeds up a little bit. She happened to be in New York. He lives in Washington, D.C. I'll come visit you. They hit it off.
Great.
He comes out here to Berkeley, visits her. And in the mail, after he comes back,
he made her a mixtape. Oh, my God. Who does that
in 2019? Oh, my God. It was like, and it's really like hip music. I'm a little too hip for her. But she's not. He's way into music, and she's not. And then, so that is just amazing. I was like, geez, I'd like to sleep with that guy. And it's like, and then here, this is what threw me. Like, a couple weeks later, he got a second mixtape. I don't know. Is that too soon for the second mixtape?
Couple weeks. I don't know. They
is that
are
too
moving.
Much?
No, it depends.
What
depends what the opening song is. I think it all comes down to the artwork and the opening song. Am I right? I mean, yeah. You know, it depends what's on it. So. Oh, that's a good story.
That is. It is a great story.
That.
Yeah,
it
makes you feel good.
I wonder if there were any songs on it where the DJ was talking. Like, you're like, oh, stop talking. I got to get this whole song. So part of the reason I invited you on here is because I'm fascinated when people reach this middle phase of life, which unfortunately for those of you in the audience who skew young, I define midlife as 33 to 66 because I can read actuarial tables, and we're not all going to live to 100, let's face it. So you may be in the middle phase, even if you don't think you are, but part of the reason I started this show is that I love being in this phase of life because I feel like most people I know are really efficient at they're efficient at their jobs, they're experienced, they have really long friendships. Like, there's a lot to love about being in the middle phase of life. Mm-hmm. You're working in an industry that has probably transitioned as much as any other.
Yes.
You started in 1992.
Before that, a couple years before that. But yeah.
So did you even have a computer? Were you still typing?
No. We
were stone you chipping
tablets,
on the stone
yes.
tablets then?
No. Here's a marker. When I started the newsroom, they had just in Milwaukee. They had just banned smoking in the newsroom. So only people who the editors, the people who were in the glass offices, could smoke. So you know, they look like a inside of a bong. You know, somebody's office because people just like the whole anybody was in the staff wanted to go in there and smoke. They'd all smoke in this office, so there was that. And then, but I've gone through in those days when you wanted to get a research something that in those days the Milwaukee Journal had done, you went into the morgue, which is the library of all the old clips, and they were paper clips. And it's not like, oh, let me look this up online and let me search this. There's none of that. So that's the era that I started in.
Right. And now you're in an always-on environment where people are frustrated if it's been 2 hours since the news conference
right.
and you don't have a hot take on it already.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
How did you make that evolution? I mean, what have you learned in having to do that?
Well, I think part of it was almost like raw evolution. You see that there's so many layoffs. So number one, you want to make yourself valuable and mm-hmm. to keep yourself valuable. So we kept and I kept trying to do new things. One thing I brought like a prop here. I know this is nothing like props on a podcast. I brought.
He's pulling out a clown suit. People know it's not. That's, you tell me what that is.
So this is a flip phone. Okay.
No, the flip camera,
flip,
right?
Flip camera.
I remember
those. The flip camera. So that's the kind where you would shoot video and then plug it into your, putting in your hard drive. So my colleague at the Chronicle at the time, Carla Marinucci, and I started playing around with this and shooting video of people. And so in those days, nobody, and this is maybe even like 10, 12 years ago, nobody was doing that. And the politicians were kind of freaked out. Mm-hmm. It had just been... We started doing it because we saw some folks who were forerunners of this trying to do, catching people politicians saying dumb stuff. And, you know, obviously, which is very easy to do, but they can always say, well, I never said that. Oh, really? Well, here's the fucking video.
Here's my flip camera.
Yeah, just give me an hour or two and I'll figure out how to plug this in. So then, you know, and then just constantly trying to keep up like that. And then now it's, you know, podcasts and everybody's shooting video. And here's my work day today. I got up this morning. I did a bit on KTVU to talk about the convention. I came in, I did a podcast with the first Native American woman to be elected to Congress. I wrote a story, like, you know, print, and then we posted it, you know, online. And then I did another podcast previewing the thing. And then I'm coming here and doing this is my third podcast of the day. Yeah. You know, oh, I'm sorry, I did a radio interview in the middle of the day. So it's like trying to be on multi-platforms.
Right.
And the challenge with that is like, you know what, you got to leave some time for actual reporting. So you have something to say and not just pulling stuff out of your ear.
Right. I remember I interviewed Rob Sheffield, who writes for Rolling Stone, and we were talking about concert reviews that he writes now. Mm-hmm. And he said, in the olden days, I would go to a concert, I would percolate for a couple days, you know? I'd think about what the concert was like and what the band reminded me of. And he said, now, you know, he said, I felt like I could write a really considered piece because I had the time. And now, of course, you've got to be cranking stuff out, right, not just all the time, but across formats.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you feel like being in this phase of life gives you any special tools that help make that easier? Is there, the fact that you're not just new starting out, do you think it's harder for people just starting in that?
Well, I think the hardest thing, I mean, for me, it's some of the technical stuff. Because, we're not digital natives. So this is stuff that takes me longer to figure it out. And my wife right now in the thought bubble in her head is he can't even open go ahead, Christine. What am I thinking? What can I open? How to attach something. I still have a challenge with that. I can do a podcast and shoot video, but I can't do that. So, but the best thing we have is what we all have. And no matter what our profession is our bullshit detector. We know what is bullshit. And we know, like, okay, what is the core of what's real and what's not? It's the gift of experience. We know what matters better than we used to. Not totally,
right,
but better than what we used to.
Right. Yeah, I always remember a piece of advice that somebody here in the audience gave me once when I was saying, well, it doesn't take me that long to do this thing. I was consulting at the time, and I was going to bill them for X number of hours, and it really only took me, 0.5X. Right. And she said, don't penalize yourself for being efficient. You know, you told them it was going to take that long. They said that was fine. And yeah. I do think it is. You get faster at stuff because you know what's extraneous and you know what doesn't need to be paid attention to,
and
hopefully.
Plus, you have the contacts and you know who to talk to right away. You don't have to think, oh, well, who should I talk to about that? Who knows this? And who do I go to about that?
Right.
So, yeah.
So as you go into this big convention tomorrow, mm-hmm. You must have some tips for us on how to deal with outrage fatigue and just overall political landscape fatigue. I mean, I don't know how you do it. So what's your advice?
I wish I did. I think, okay, a couple things I was thinking about was, number one, I mean, find some trusted news sources that you have. Try not to watch, with all due respect, our friends on cable television 24/7. They just feed the outrage. There was there's a story today about Trump admits that the Russians helped him with the election, then walks it back. And that was like, I just happened to keep noticing, it's only on for 6 hours. That was a tweet he said, and it's like, who cares? That's not really relevant to anything. We know what the score is on Russia, anybody who's been following that. So try to focus on news sources that provide some sort of depth and context. The other thing is, and this is an advice I have for some of my colleagues and myself, is, get outside and see the sunshine once in a while. Get off Twitter.
Right.
I mean, because that's, an exaggerated view of the world. David Carr, who was the longtime media critic at the Washington Post, died a couple years ago, fantastic perspective on a lot of things. He said he treats Twitter as like a stream, like a rolling river. And every once in a while, he dips his ladle in and sees what's in it and then examines that and says, okay. But he doesn't constantly watch the river for what's happening,
right,
or dive into the river or whatever. Just, it's always going to be going 24/7. There will be the outrage will be more outrageous than it should be. Take a deep breath.
Right. Yeah. So are there things that you see as particularly hopeful? Because I have to say, as we start approaching 2020, I'm already pre-panicking. I'm already getting anxious in advance. So yes. What are the things that you see that are signs of hope on the political landscape about the whole process of covering politics and politics itself?
About covering politics? The signs of hope I see, you know, if you're concerned about the president, are number one, the institutions held and are holding in the country. The court system is holding for the most part. And also look at the resistance. I mean, that came out of nowhere, but it came out of somewhere. It came out of people's hearts. They were outraged at what they saw. They went to the streets, they organized, they got in groups, they elected people who could change what's going on. So that's something that could be helpful about. In terms of covering politics, I think one sign that is a little more hopeful is that there are fewer people jumping on every tweet that the president says. Because most of them are, you know, self-serving and goofy. But, you know, there's a fine line there because you have to monitor what he says because he's the most powerful person in the world.
Right.
So there's hope there. But I think the hope is in the people who are trying to do something about it. I think I get frustrated a lot with people who were moaning to their friends on Facebook or social media and say, oh my God, can you believe what he said now? And, you know, trading memes. That's fine. That's venting. But if you really care, get out and do something about it. That's what you need to do.
Right. I was at, our younger daughter graduated last night from Oakland Tech. Woo woo, OT. Woo! And a school board member who spoke to the kids said, if you are a senior and you are pre-registered or registered to vote, because in California you can pre-register at 16, please stand up. And I would say 85% of 466 kids stood up.
Wow,
it was pretty
great.
Impressive. Although in the car ride on the way home, our daughter said, the kid next to me said, I don't know if I'm registered or not. It was just peer pressure. So hopefully it wasn't all that, but that was, to me, I was like, you know, that feels good. That feels hopeful to me.
Oh, absolutely. Seeing younger people. I don't remember being as politically interested, but not active. I think like anti-apartheid stuff when we were, you know, in school and in the day where people were doing that. But even then, you know, I remember goofing on some of the people we'd see, like sorority girls with their pearls and stuff. Oh my God, I'm so against apartheid. Oh my God, it's terrible. But a great new album out, Sun City.
Ironically, that's coming up later in the evening.
Yes,
maybe you know that already.
You tickled my brain with that one.
So talking about your own midlife mixtape, what are the ways that you balance, you know, what are the ways you get outside and look at the sunshine? What are the things you still want to do? You're a young guy. What are the challenges you still want to tackle?
Helps me balance is by probably to the detriment of my career, I do get off Twitter and get out. And I do like getting outside. I still play soccer, full field soccer in an over 30 league, which is, you know, I'm the guy now. And again, I'm going to do something that visual for the podcast. I'm the guy who's grabbing people, you know, like the old guy you play with or the old, you know, like I'm the guy who's like, oh, I've become that guy. I actually apologized to a couple guys in the field. It's like, oh, come on. I'm sorry. I know I grabbed you in a cheap old man, too slow to grab someone. But so I do that. I like doing all kinds of outdoor stuff. And I love to go see music.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way to just, I've always been a way to just get out of my head or get into my head and get into a different space.
Yeah.
And I love spending time, you know, family and friends and that. And IRL.
IRL
is great. IRL is really, in real life, it's real life is much better than online life.
I agree. So what advice do you have for younger people, or do you wish you could go back and tell yourself?
And it's kind of both. Just go for it. I think I was, as a young adult, probably a little too hesitant to do things, to try and go for it. I think this generation, certainly the last two generations, are much more, you know, fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to kind of like, you know, make sure I knew what I was talking about before I did something. And I wish I'd kind of jumped into stuff more and just said, give it a try. Even if you fail, you know, the whole fail fast thing. I wish I'd known that when I was younger and had done more of that.
Yeah.
And I wish I had traveled more as a young person. You know, people travel. I mean, now it's like 40% of the kids go away when they're in college.
Right.
I wish I had done something like that or not just been so intent on like, oh, you got to get a job. And I didn't need to get a job, but I wish I had taken a little more time to do that because, you know, our industry was always on the verge of crumbling, so it still is. So I've always been pressured to, you know, get a job, hold a job. So that's lent, I think, an exaggeration of caution to my life. So I would like to have done more. Just go for it. Have that more attitude.
So, but you have an empty nest now, right? Your lovely daughter's
yes.
here. She's home from college.
Yeah, she's home from college. Yeah, but we have an empty nest, yes.
So are you guys going to do, are you going to do some of that travel? Can you do it now?
We, for the first time this year, we traveled in April.
What? Off season?
Not in the summer, yeah. Which, boy, the prices are lower and there's not a lot of people around. Yeah, isn't that crazy? Yeah, the empty nest thing is unusual, as you'll soon see. Your rhythms are off. I mean, you know, at first it's like, oh my God, it's really quiet. And then as soon as you figure that out, then the kids come home for like Christmas. And then they go away again. You're like, oh my God, okay, it's quiet again. And but then we got into a rhythm. This was our first year of it. And we started going out. We started eating later, like New Yorkers, like at 8:30 at night. And then we started going to see more music on Mardi Gras this year. We went to go see, we're like, oh, let's go see a band in Oakland, this Mardi Gras, this New Orleans band. And they were okay, but it was fun to just go
out
on a Tuesday night.
The point is, you were out on a Tuesday.
Tuesday night, yeah.
And you didn't have to pay a babysitter for it.
And we did not have to pay a babysitter, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, well, that gives me hope because I had a complete breakdown at the dry cleaner the other day. I was holding the lady's hand. What'll I do with myself when they're gone next year? And she's like, do you want the shirts? I'm like, I don't know. I'm so sorry. I don't know why this is happening to me. I'm not even making that up. I don't think we can go back to Oak Hillside Cleaners for your shirts, dear. That's on you. I can never go in there again. So the other thing I want to say is the Chronicle, I've been in the Bay Area 21 years, and it has been such a challenging time for the Chronicle. And I've been a freelancer for the paper for on and off for years. I've worked with some wonderful editors over there. And the work that you guys continue to do in the face of layoffs, in the face of cuts, to bring issues to light that would not be covered by national publications is super important. And I think a lot about Heather Knight's reporting. Heather Knight
is... she's done a great job in the city.
She's amazing. She finds these problems that nobody's thinking about. She reports them deeply, and she gets policies to change. So she did one recently on SF General where they were billing patients unfairly and exorbitantly. And based on her reporting, they revisited that policy, and they have changed it now. So it breaks my heart whenever I think about local newspapers going away, and I made a plug for local music. I'm now making a plug for local newspapers. Support
Amen.
The Chronicle.
Amen.
Subscribe online, subscribe in the hard copy format, and you know, you guys do great work, and we need it. We need it. It's part of democracy. We need it to keep going. So, and on that dour note, I have...
Wait, democracy keep going?
Democracy's not dour.
Yeah,
that's not dour.
Okay, come on.
All right, so I made up a game. This is the next thing we're going to do. We're moving right along. I made up a game called Generations, and here's how it's going to work. I'm going to give you guys a hypothetical scenario in which one might be expected to have music playing in the background. Then Joe is going to read three choices of songs that you might play in that scenario. One will be a baby boomer song, one will be a Gen X song, one will be a millennial song. I am sorry to the Gen Z people in the audience. We know the answer is always Beyonce, so that wasn't even why do it. So here's the thing, you guys. Don't just vote your generational line. You're better than that. There are good songs in every generation. If you really like the millennial song, say it loud and proud. It's okay. So we're going to do audience participation. You need to yell so we know which song is the winner. There are no prizes for this, just generational pride, I guess. So okay, here's the first hypothetical. I'm going to read it. Joe's going to tell you what the three choices are, and then he'll read the choices a second time, and you shout when when it hits your heart, when it's the right song. Okay, your house is a mess. Wherever you live, it is a stone-cold mess, and somebody important is coming over. It's your boyfriend's mother, it's your boss, it's somebody who's going to rent. I don't know who it is, but you need to clean up, and you got to get a high-energy song, you got to get your blood pumping, you need to scrub a toilet. So what is the right song to put on in that scenario, Mr. Garofoli?
All right. Would you choose the boomer song, Gimme Some Lovin'? Gimme Some Love. I was singing it like that.
Are you going to sing it?
Gimme Some Lovin'.
Gimme Some.
By Spencer Davis Group. Or would you choose the Gen X song, Tenderness, by General Public? Or would you choose the millennial song, Hey Ya, by Outkast?
All right, hold on. We're going to read them out one at a time, and you cheer if this is your song for scrubbing down, I don't know, the kitchen counters.
Okay.
Okay. Number Is one, it?
Give me some leaven.
Nobody? That's just me? Okay. All right.
Tenderness.
Where is it?
Or hey ya. Yeah.
Clear winner with hey ya. Yeah. Duly noted.
As an English, that was a tough call. English beat fan, but that's.
Would you do? I would take it.
Honestly,
I probably would do that too. Okay. So it's finally spring. Maybe we're going to get some warm weather at one point. So you know what that means. You got to get outside on the streets and do a protest. We live in the Bay Area. I know you have drawers full of new protest t-shirts since 2016. So you got to...
Your Beto for Senate t-shirts.
Your Beto for Senate. I have a whole drawer full of them. So you're getting ready to leave for protest march. What song are you going to play as your walk-up music? What's your Hype Squad music?
Okay, will it be for you boomers or for boomers? The song would be War. What is it good for?
Absolutely nothing.
Say it again! The Temptations. Gen X song, Ain't Gonna Play Sun City.
Do you guys even remember that? Come on,
Ain't gonna play Sun City, little Steven.
I didn't know we were singing tonight, Joe, but here
sorry.
We are.
Well, we're not That's really. singing. It's terrible singing. Artists United Against Apartheid by Little Steven, for Little Steven Van Zandt from the Springsteen Band and The Sopranos. And, or three, the Millennials. Millennial song would be This Is America by Childish Gambino.
All right, so let's read through them again. Which song, as you pull on your Black Lives Matter, I Stand With Planned Parenthood, and Women's March t-shirts in a row on top of each other?
Okay, is it War? What is it good for? Woo! How about for Ain't Gonna Play Sun City?
I feel like maybe that was too specific. Like that, like, I picked all these songs.
Song.
Don't blame Joe.
That's a great song.
It is.
Or This Is America by Childish Gambino. Woo! This is a young
swing. The millennials are pulling it. Okay. So it's time for a road trip. We just got through Memorial Day weekend. Maybe you took a road trip, but there's one song that you like to play that really puts you in the right frame of mind. So which song is your quintessential road trip song? Is it?
The boomer song Born to Run by The Boss, Bruce Springsteen.
You don't even have to say who that's
okay,
by.
Yeah,
that's just insulting.
Is it the Gen X song Vacation by the Go-Go's? Wow, they got some hisses. Was that a hiss?
No, that was me. That was me.
Oh,
okay. No one's hissing the Go-Go's.
Okay. Or the millennial song Float On by Modest Mouse.
I feel like that's got a nice vibe to it for a road trip. All right, so we're going to vote now. Road trip song.
Born to Run.
Yeah.
Vacation by the Go-Go's. Float On by Modest Mouse.
Anybody want to go with Jim? He's going to be playing Modest Mouse on his road trip. Okay, so now nobody's home. Finally, everybody's left you alone. There's no demands on your time. It's time for a solo dance party. Maybe you're cooking. Maybe you're in front of a mirror. I'm not judging. Maybe you've got a hairbrush and you're singing into it. But it's a solo dance party and you've got three choices for your songs.
Is it the boomer anthem, Dancing in the Streets, by Martha Navratilova? Is it the Gen X tune, Dancing with Myself, by Billy Idol? Or the millennial song, Dancing on My Own, by Robin?
All right, here we go. We're taking the vote. This is important. Solo dance party soundtrack.
Dancing in the Streets.
Dancing. Why are you and I now? Like, literally every boomer song we're singing.
That was in our ears growing up.
Yeah.
Dancing with Myself. Oh, what? Dancing in the Streets? Anybody?
Nobody? Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Dancing with Myself. And Dancing on My Own.
I'm giving that to Billy Idol because I don't want the millennials to win every single one.
Wow, okay. This is surprising.
All right, this is our last one. Songs for a Lonely Heart. You're home. Things didn't work out. You need somebody who's going to cry with you or make you cry, whatever it is. So your song for a Lonely Heart could be?
The boomer song Yesterday by the Beatles. The millennial song Cry Me a River by Justin Timberlake. Or the Gen X song How Soon Is Now by the Smiths.
And I'm stopping the voting there because there is only one right answer, and it is the Smiths. Thank you very much for playing There won't be any voting on that. I mean, some things are just fact. So that's it, you guys. We've come to the end of the program. I want to thank Kyle Terese. Thank you so much for your songs. Check out his website, M the Heir Apparent, and support local music. Go see him play. He's coming up. He's got a show coming up, so let's get out there. Thank you, Joe Garofoli. If you guys have not listened to It's All Political, his podcast, I recommend it highly. It's one of the ways I like to stage my news input. I have to take it from trusted sources, so that's great. And subscribe to The Chronicle. Buy a Chronicle. Subscribe to it online. We got to support our local press if we want to have it keep sticking around. And thank you, Beta Brand, so much for having us here tonight. You can buy a whole bunch of stuff online, even Beta Brand, but make sure when you're buying online, you're buying it from a local manufacturer, a local business. Let's keep San Francisco vibrant and not just all tech bros. You know, let's keep it interesting. Check out the Ruth Bader Ginsburg line. I recommend it. And it's time to give away a copy of the Thank You Project. Joe Funk, are you in the audience? Joe, you have won a copy of my book. So thank you, everybody, so much. There you go, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, everyone who came out tonight. I really appreciate it. You guys have a great evening. Go Warriors. Woo!
Thank you so much for tuning into this special episode. And if your appetite was piqued for Beta Brand Designs, guess what? They gave me a promo code to give Midlife Mixtape podcast listeners. So go to betabrand.com, find something cool, and type in mixtape when you order from the site. That's M-I-X-T-A-P-E, all one word, mixtape. And you'll get 20% off your order. Check out the Sassiest Pants and the Ruth Bader Ginsburg line. I recommend them. So yeah, promo code mixtape at betabrand.com. Check it out. I would love to hear what you guys thought of today's episode. And as always, you can catch up with me at Midlife Mixtape on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or email me at dj@midlifemixtape.com. I hope you guys have a wonderful week.
I don't want to be this, don't want to be that, don't want to give up, I want to give back. I want to be free by whatever means, whatever you want from me. I want to be, don't want to be this, don't want to be that, don't want to give up, I want to give back. I want to be free by whatever means, whatever you want from me. I want to be. I want to be free by whatever.